Since I went through the lengthy introduction earlier, I'm going to let Jean have the time to speak with us, but she wants me to introduce you to as, here's Jean.
Oh, and in addition, I wear an 8.5 size shoe, and I got my ears pierced when I was 30, got my driver's license at 42, and a hearing aid at 70. Now you know everything. I tell you, that really took me by surprise this morning. I had no idea why my friend was walking me past chair after chair, all the way up to the front. Then I realized, Lutherans are a sneaky bunch. Well, you can imagine that I am so pleased to be here, especially gathered as we are under the theme, Here We Stand. It's a time when so many Lutherans can only say, here I waver, or here I bend, here we stand. Oh, God has blessed us. There's a cartoon. Linus is saying to Charlie Brown, if you have some problem in your life, do you believe you should try to solve it right away or think about it a while? And Charlie Brown says, oh, think about it by all means. I believe you should think about it for a long time. To give yourself time to do the right thing about the problem, responds Linus. Charlie Brown says, no, give it time to go away. Yeah. And that's where so many people are on the issue that brings us together. They hope it will go away. I'm going to make sure I'm with the right group, though. If you read the media, they'll tell you the people who are anti-choice are rabid, rigid, ranting, raging, radical rebels. But I know that you are patient, pious, peaceful, prayerful, passionate patriots. That's you. So I am honored to be here with so many friends I didn't know I would be seeing. When we began, it was a group of women from here, there, and everywhere, not knowing one another, paying our own way to get together. And from that, we ended up with an office up here in St. Paul. And one of the young students who served that first office is here today. Grown, a father, grandfather, oh my goodness, that's terrible, whatever happened? Longtime co-laborers, Don Richmond is here today. He was one of the first members of our board. Look at the head shaking, yeah. Dave Wente, oh my goodness. I tell you, some of them have turned gray, can you believe that? Oh, I lost their hair. All proven leaders in this battle to protect the sanctity of life. I thought that maybe having been there at the beginning, it would have been fun to go back and share with you some of those early experiences, like the time we had an event out in California, big famous hotel, and all of the publicity they put out, including the big sign over the big room where we were meeting said Lutherians for Life. Or the time when I went over to help Australia start Australians Lutherans for Life. And just as I was being introduced, an older man stood up, hands in his suspenders, and he said, "I was born a Lutheran, and I'm gonna die a Lutheran. I've been a Lutheran all my life, and I ain't joining no organization." He had no idea what Lutherans for Life was all about. But I decided the time is too crucial, the political system too significant to spend time looking back over the past. The role we play now is absolutely essential. It's not uncommon to hear that the pro-life movement is similar to that of the abolitionist movement in the 1800s. And there's a quote from Abraham Lincoln that very much describes our efforts today. "We will make converts day by day. We will grow strong by the violence and injustices of our adversaries. And unless truth be a mockery and justice a hollow lie, we will be in the majority after a while. This battle will be fought on principle. And if we remain united and undaunted and inflexible, then in God's good time, we will prevail. The naysayers have tried to bury us many times, but the truth is that this great pro-life movement, of which Lutherans for Life has been a part from the very beginning, this great movement is alive and well and growing. But with our public, persistent pursuit of protection for the unborn and now increasingly the long-born, there's a price to pay. And no surprise about that. When Jesus sent out his disciples, you remember, he said he was sending them out like sheep among the wolves, and not much has changed. Now, as then, sheep get sheared or they end up as lamb chops. And today I'd like to list a few of the costs to those of us who are attempting to defend the sanctity of life, because we need to be prepared for the incredible battle ahead. First, many people, pro-life people, have paid dearly for their work and their witness. They've lost their reputations, lost their occupations, lost families and friends, and even freedom. You've been hearing maybe about Dinesh D'Souza and the wonderful pro-life films he does, and ended up in jail. We had one of the founders of Lutherans for Life, a leading theologian, on his way to becoming a bishop in his other church body than the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, never got to be a bishop because of his involvement with the pro-life movement and particularly Lutherans for Life. But there's another kind of price we pay, that of having to put up with some of the silly stuff that we hear from pro-choice people, and they offer it as serious and, you know, something we should really be impressed with. Like the entertainer who said, "Really, pro-abortion gal, by the way, really, there's nothing wrong with pregnancy. Half the people wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for women being pregnant." Okay, which hair? And people, you know, she gets quoted all over the world. And then there's the price we pay for having to live with the shame brought on us by politicians who haven't met an abortion they didn't like. That includes a presidential candidate today who says she wants the Supreme Court to uphold Roe v. Wade, abortion for all 9 months for any reason, using any horrific form to destroy the unborn child. Oh, and P.S., she wants you and me to pay for it. Shame on her. Many politicians, you know, go with the wind, and columnists and late-night comedians have been having a field day commenting on politicians as they bob and weave. Yet many Christians are also like some of those politicians. I don't know if you had the cartoon in your paper that showed a politician and they drew him as a waffle. Okay. When you ask some people, Christians, who say they're pro-life, but who vote differently, how can you do that? How can you separate that? And generally, there are three reasons I've found. They say, I'm voting for her out of party loyalty. And yet they're saying they're pro-life. Others say, because they agree with the pro-choice candidates on a lot of other issues. But the main reason they say is because I don't believe in being a single issue voter. Abortion is just one issue, isn't it? It's an essential issue. It's a fundamental issue. It's a life and death issue that impacts all those other issues. Would you vote for someone who's good on issues like crime, but who also condones child abuse? And isn't that the first and worst abuse any child can experience at the hand of an adult? Would you vote for a politician who's good on the economy and jobs creation, but who also affirms the job of being an abortionist? Of course we wouldn't. None of us would do that. Candidates who are pro-life have a respect and compassion for the most defenseless. And whatever other political and social issues they embrace, even if we disagree with them, the pro-life issue is fundamental. If we can't trust a candidate to protect the most vulnerable, how can we depend on him to be trusted with our religious freedom, our religious liberty, our religious rights? We can't. A number of years ago, a group of pro-life leaders were invited to the Billy Graham compound. And the purpose of our requesting that meeting was to ask Billy Graham, why don't you speak about the abortion issue? You have a worldwide audience. Speak about the sanctity of life. His manager came out and said, it is different than being a pastor in a church. It's different than being a pro-life leader. He has to speak to people of different denominations of beliefs. His motive is to save souls. So he did what every man does. He sent his wife out to talk to us. So Ruth Bell Graham came out. And she said, back in World War I, all the men had gone off to war in this little community back in Europe, and all that were left were the mothers, children, and old people. And she said, one day, with all the men and boys gone to war, they were so vulnerable, and they saw the dust of the oncoming army, and they immediately panicked, yelled to everybody, run to the hills, and they did, crowds going, but not this one little old lady. She grabbed her broom, and holding it high over her head, she ran in the direction of the oncoming army. And the men, people leaving, the older people and the moms, yelled at her, "You crazy old lady, what good will a broom do against tanks and guns?" She said, "Well, it might not do any good, but at least they'll know whose side we're on." We have a mighty broom when we walk into the voting booth in just a couple of weeks. We have the ability to help ensure, to the degree it's possible, that we will have a Supreme Court that will provide us with constitutional rights to be born, to be protected, to be treated as persons while in the womb. Now, where was I? We also have to pay the price of listening to the illogic of elitists who, in effect, say about the unborn, if its genetic makeup is like a human being, and if its structure is like a human being, and if it responds like a human being, and if it looks like a human being, it must be a blob of tissue. I don't know if it reminds you of that comedian, Jeff Foxworthy, you know? I think he bases it all on people from Arkansas. There was one, ooh, and I'm from Arkansas, did you know that? 26 years there, and I still haven't learned the language. he did one a while back, and it went like this. If the state trooper stops your car, and he says to you, "Any ID?" And you say, "ID about what?" Then you must be a redneck. He was up a while back at a Christian gathering of some sort, and in Vegas, and he said, if your Baptist friends think you're Catholic, and your Catholic friends think you're Baptist, then you must be a Lutheran. We have all met people who continue to say, if you were really pro-life, you'd fight hunger, you'd deal with the drug problem, you'd care for the homeless, and their list goes on and on. But the pro-life people I know, whatever church body they're in, do care for those things, either through their church, through community organizations, or even just personally taking part in areas where people have needs. But none of those issues has the primacy and urgency of the abortion issue, because only the killing of babies, unborn children, has been legalized by the American government, sanctioned by the medical profession, and endorsed by Christian church bodies. What physician supports the right of men to do violence to the bodies of women and children? None. What church has defended rape or drunken driving? None. What will happen if we continue to allow the killing of unborn children and increasingly newborn handicapped children and increasingly elderly people, when they become unwanted, unprotected, and independent, non-independent, what will happen? I used to be a fan, still am a fan, of a former cardinal from New York City, John Cardinal O'Connor. And I remember him writing a column about this very issue. If you were really pro-life, you would da-da-da. This is what he said. You can be hungry, but alive. You can be homeless, but alive. You can be in a wheelchair, but alive. You can be handicapped or injured or battered, but alive. But you can't be killed and be alive. So, for Lutherans for Life, to put one's energy simply into protecting unborn children, to keeping them alive, is a natural, needful, and noble work that each one of you do. Yet we still admit people who argue, despite all the scientific evidence, that what's in the womb of a pregnant woman is a blob, tissue, or uterine contents. Doesn't that sound scientific? They deny the obvious and set up absurd alternatives. There is a biochemist in California who was asked, what does it mean to be alive? Life, he said, is a self-sustained chemical system capable of undergoing Darwinian evolution. I'm going to read that again, because you need to write a sermon about that. Life is a self-sustained chemical system capable of undergoing Darwinian evolution. And he got such praise for that, articles about him all over. And you say, hey, I'm from Brooklyn and I don't understand it. Good grief. To say that a human being is nothing but molecules and atoms is like saying a Shakespearean play is nothing but letters and words, or the Sistine Chapel is nothing but colors and paint, or that the Bible is nothing but paper and ink. To be in the pro-life movement means having to hear politicians and leaders of groups like Planned Parenthood being applauded for having the courage of their convictions. If some of you happened to see the morning news, there was a young woman on there defending Planned Parenthood, and one of the things she said, along with then defending Hillary Clinton, who was supporting Planned Parenthood, was, well, yes, she's made a number of mistakes, but she has the courage of her convictions. Nero and Attila the Hun had the courage of their convictions. Hitler and Mussolini had the courage of their convictions. Saddam Hussein and Jack Kevorkian had the courage of their convictions. The true trust of character comes when people have the courage to examine and then eventually change, perhaps, their convictions. And sixth, and the last one, I'm not done, but the last one I want to mention about the price we pay. It is exhausting and frustrating for me to hear people I debate or have contact with as I try to simply get people to think about the words they're using. You don't have to be a genius or have a PhD or anything. Just think about the simple words you're using. And as I wrote that last week, I thought about a time I was picked up at the airport, and the man took me to the hotel where I would be speaking, and as we approached, there was a mob with their placards and shouting, "My body, my choice, my body, my choice." Oh, and as we got up right to the door, one particularly aggressive woman took her sign and shoved it up under the nose of the man who had chauffeured me there. And she shouted, "My body, my choice." And he stepped back a little and he looked at her and he said, "Oh, your choice, and you chose that body?" Language matters, and words have consequences. And people today, in many cases, as they address this issue, have no idea what they're saying. We have had 43 years of heartbreaking evidence that abortion isn't a solution. It's an excuse for giving up solutions, for not finding solutions. And it has bruised the soul of America. America has traded reason for rhetoric, facts for feelings, standards for slogans, and thinking for shouting, "My body, my choice." And the louder you get, the more persuasive you're supposed to be. I was in Ireland a few months ago, and I came across an old Irish prayer. And it goes like this: "May the people who love me still love me. May God turn the hearts of those who don't love me. But if he can't turn their hearts, may he turn their ankles so I may know them by their limp." We don't need a limp to recognize our opponents. We know them by the way they argue. We know their arguments limp and their reasons limp. But every once in a while, even Hollywood gets it right. Number of years ago, how many of you remember the film Awakenings? Yeah. Yeah? It was a story about a neurologist played by Robin Williams and a man named Leonard, played by Robert De Niro. And the neurologist brought Leonard out of a 30-year coma. And in the movie, in the middle of the night, after Leonard is back in the real world, we're told he makes a middle-of-the-night call to the physician, the neurologist, and he shouts, "We've got to tell everybody. We've got to remind them. We've got to remind them how good it is." And the neurologist, half groggy with sleep, said, "How good what is?" He said, "Read the newspaper." "It's all bad. It's all bad," says Leonard. "People have forgotten what life is all about. They've forgotten what it is to be alive. They need to be reminded about what they have and what they can lose. The joy of life, the gift of life, the freedom of life, the wonderment of life. They need to be reminded," shouted Leonard. And that's what we are. We are reminders. We are reminders that it was God who made us, Psalm 100. That it was God who formed us in the womb, Isaiah 44. That it was God whose hands shaped us, Job 10. And that it was God who chose each one of us before the creation of the world, Ephesians 1. And we have to remind ourselves that the history of reform in the United States requires struggles that last approximately 40 years. It was 40-ish for the year of the anti-slavery movement, 40-ish years for the civil rights movement, 40-ish years for the women's suffrage movement, and 40-ish years for the workers' rights movement. Well, we're at year 43 now in this struggle, and while there's been a lot of progress, to finish the job may take a lot longer, depending on what happens in a few weeks with the Supreme Court. So, can unborn children trust you and me to be in it for the long haul? If the wrong candidate is elected, if we have to go through decades of abortion rights paid with tax monies? We already know that the coming years are coming rapidly in the area of information. Every time you turn around, there's a new one, whatever these things are. And at my age, which as you heard was 63, at my age, it's impossible for me to figure out how that all works. But information, and who is better at giving information? Look at the materials that Lutherans for Life has produced over the years from the very beginning. Not just the Bible studies and the print stuff, but the new ways you have of communicating. Lutherans for Life and its educational ministry will play a key role in these immediate near future years. So we have to remind ourselves that truth is not a floating concept, but truth has an attractive power of its own, and the greatest friend of truth is time. And as I see some of my old friends here, it makes you aware of time and how things change. I've been in it for 47 years in the movement. I started out as a very dark brunette. Years back, I would have been able to read this or deliver this speech without a single note in front of me. That doesn't happen anymore. I have to put down, go to church, it's Sunday. Not quite, but almost. Time takes its toll, but it is also a friend of truth. And we will get there. And you know, I could have been married to Habakkuk. I don't know if you remember. In Arkansas, they call it Habakkuk. In the book of Habakkuk. Well, Habakkuk, a few weeks ago, was our Old Testament reading. And the first four verses of chapter 1 say this. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? See, this is me yelling. Mrs. Habakkuk, why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly let me look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. And every one of us at some point in our life gets to the Habakkuk moment. Lord, where are you? That's chapter 1:1-4. Look at chapter 2, and the Lord answers. Write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. But the righteous shall live by faith. Those, for me, are incredibly encouraging words, despite how dark and grim it looks at times in our government. But any effort to protect human life will cost. And unlike those who promote abortion, those of us who denounce it will never profit from it financially. Even those whose lives we save may never know us or return to thank us. But the reward that is ours is the reward we carry in our hearts and souls. That's all, but that is enough. No wonder we're objects of ridicule, and all of you have had to feel that response from other people, either by mail, email, or in person. I certainly have a very thick folder of those kinds of letters. We don't make sense in a me-first society. We don't compute in a convenience culture. We don't add up in a nation addicted to greed. We do for free what we wouldn't do for money. We do for love what we wouldn't do for power. And we do for others what we wouldn't do for ourselves. So this conference in Bloomington is our way of saying to the state of Minnesota, one of those M states, to the state of Minnesota and to the other 49, it's our way of saying to the Congress of the United States and to the unborn children still to come that Lutherans for Life will not call in sick. We will march in the January cold. We'll take the heat for our beliefs. We will continue to pray for our nation and pay the price our witness costs until that day when our beloved land is once again one nation under God with liberty and justice for all, not for almost all. God bless y'all.